Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Friday, June 28th, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. A man injured during an ammonia leak aboard a fishing vessel in Sitka has died. Charles Chuck Baker of Auburn, Washington, was aboard the Igil B when it began leaking ammonia. As KCAW's Ed Ronco reports, Baker is remembered by his family as a dedicated fisherman who loved being on the water.
Charles Chuck Baker was 82 years old. He was a 60-year veteran of the fishing industry in Alaska and co-owned the Igil B with his son, Mike. Riona Baker is his wife.
We met in 1957 on a blind date.
And for as long as Riona Baker had known her husband, he was around the sea.
He started out with boats and Sea Scouts when he was a teenager, and then he went into the Navy after high school. And then right to work on a cannery tender after he got out of the Navy. So I don't know whether it was a built-in love of boats, or, but that's what he loves. He loved doing. That's really the only comfort we can take in this whole thing, was that he was where he wanted to, like, loved to be, and doing what he loved to do.
The 86-foot Igil B was tied up at Sitka Sound Seafoods on Monday when the leak occurred. Cheyenne Sanchez, with the spill response arm of the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, says the vessel released upwards of 50 pounds of anhydrous ammonia. The chemical is used in refrigeration systems. The spill was quickly contained Monday, although workers were evacuated from the area and a street was closed for about an hour. No one besides Baker was seriously injured in the accident, but three or four people reported to area hospitals complaining of ammonia exposure symptoms. Those symptoms include burning of the eyes, nose, and throat. At the time of the accident, Chuck Baker was on board the vessel with his son, Mike, and his 20-year-old grandson, Stephen.
To us, Stephen is a hero.
Again, Riona Baker.
Our grandson tried very hard to save his grandfather, but he did save his father. Because I think if our grandson had not been there with a mask on, there might have been more than one tragic ending.
A memorial service for Chuck Baker will likely take place after the fishing season. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
If you are sick and not feeling well, Dr. Ursula Bauer can't do anything to make you feel better. But she is doing a lot to help shape the policies and programs that may keep you from getting sick in the first place. Bauer works at the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta, Georgia, where she's head of the National Center for Chronic Disease Prevention. She was in Sitka this week to visit SEARCH and to assess the impact of the $2.4 million the CDC grants to prevention programs like women's health, cancer screening, tobacco cessation, and diabetes prevention. Bauer stopped by KCAW to share her ideas on disease prevention. Her first goal, to frame the conversation about health around people rather than around disease.
People want to be in control of their health. They might not talk about health specifically, but they want a quality of life. They want to live to see their grandchildren grow up. They want to be productive members of their community. And they don't think about that in terms of diabetes or tobacco use or nutrition, but those are the things, or avoiding those things, that are going to get them the quality of life that they want.
Bauer says that public health in the U.S. had some amazing successes in the last century: potable water, sanitation, pasteurization and food safety, and quality housing. But lately, just as medicine has become more specialized, efforts to address public health issues have become more fragmented. Bauer says it's time again to step back and look at problems holistically.
One of the things that we're realizing in public health is how many aspects of the community touch health. How much has to really support the well-being of the individual and the community? It's education, it's housing, it's transportation, it's the justice system, it's the behavioral health system, it's the clinical medicine system. It's everything in the community that needs to be supporting health as a goal. When we can get all of those partners aligned and working toward the same thing, we can really support people in making that healthful choice.
Although the CDC-funded programs at SEARCH often involve a one-on-one interaction between a provider and a patient or client, Bauer says this relationship is not where she directs her energy. Her role is to shape policy and create the environment for better health. She wants to take down disease like fluoridated water took down cavities.
What we see is in so many places, our communities are designed for disease. I like to say that if a space alien came down to any place in our country, it would think that we support obesity as our highest value because of all the ways that we promote obesity in our communities, the ready availability of fast foods, the soda pop within an arm's reach of every American, the driving culture, the lack of opportunity for physical activity. And we didn't really decide as a society or as a community to make that happen. That evolved over time as the obesity epidemic evolved over the last 30 years or more. And I think more and more communities are kind of stopping and saying, well, wait a minute, who decided that there should be a fast food restaurant within 4 minutes of every American home? Is that a value that my community wants, or do we want a different kind of a value? So through programs like the Community Transformation Program, we're asking those questions. What kind of a community do we want, and how do we need to get organized in order to build that for ourselves?
Ursula Bauer is the director of the National Center for Chronic Disease Prevention. During her visit to Sitka, she also dropped in on the Search Clinic in Cake and had lunch with the community elders. Her purpose was to learn how the Center for Disease Control can better support Alaska Natives. After Sitka, she was scheduled to travel to Oregon to meet with the Northwest Portland Area Indian Health Board. A 45-day public comment period opens today for a catch-sharing plan allocating halibut between the commercial and charter fishing fleets in Southeast and the Central Gulf of Alaska. The plan was recommended by the North Pacific Fishery Management Council last fall, and the public comment period is part of the process for implementing new federal regulations. Rachel Baker is a fishery management specialist with NOAA Fisheries in Alaska.
It will change the annual process of allocating halibut between the charter and commercial fisheries in Southeast and South Central Alaska. It'll establish allocations for each sector and then specify a method for setting harvest restrictions for charter anglers.
The proposed system would allocate a percentage of the combined charter and commercial catch to the charter fleet. That percentage changes depending on the overall amount set each year by the International Pacific Halibut Commission. And it's expected the North Pacific Council will make annual recommendations for charter fleet management measures, bag limits, and size limits, for instance, to keep the charter catch at the allocation levels. The plan would replace a guideline harvest level system or a desired target of halibut currently in place for the charter fleet. Baker says the catch share plan also creates a system for the commercial halibut fleet to transfer individual fishing quota or IFQs to the charter fleet under what is called the Guided Angler Fish Program.
It's a voluntary program. No one is required to use the Guided Angler Fish Program. It's just intended to give IFQ permit holders and charter permit holders some flexibility when charter harvest limits are something less than what's in place for unguided anglers.
Public comment closes August 12th. The National Marine Fisheries Service will use the public comments to compile a final rule, and if implemented, the allocation plan could be in place for the 2014 season. Planners for the electrical power line between Petersburg and Cake are pursuing options that avoid the nearby community of Kuprianov and Petersburg Creek. The board of the Southeast Alaska Power Agency, or SEPA, which is developing the connection, heard an update on the project this week in Petersburg. Joe Vicknicki reports.
Consulting companies are working on planning an environmental review for potential routes for a power line that could connect Cake to the electrical system in Petersburg, where power lines continue on to Wrangell and Ketchikan. SEPA owns those transmission lines along with two hydroelectric projects in southern Southeast and is pursuing the Cake connection. One of the routes initially looked at for the project included running power lines over or under the mouth of Petersburg Creek, which is on Kuprianov Island just across the Wrangell Narrows from Petersburg. Mark Shinman works for the consulting firm Commonwealth Associates out of Mount Vernon, Washington, and he gave a project update to the SEPA board.
We got back comments recently from the Forest Service. They didn't really like the Petersburg Creek option. Of course, Borough Petersburg didn't like it. We've talked to a lot of people in Kupernov, and they don't like it, so we've gone out and looked at other alternatives.
Shinman says there are now three options under consideration in the environmental review. The Petersburg Creek option isn't one. The three options are what's called the center-south route, which would cross Wrangell Narrows and the Tonka Road system on the Lindenberg Peninsula south of Petersburg. There's also two northern routes, which would use an established road corridor on the northeast corner of Kupernov Island. One of those options would involve laying a submarine cable on the seafloor in Frederick Sound to make the crossing to Kupernov. And a new option would mean tunneling underneath the mouth of the Wrangell Narrows near Outlook Park in Petersburg to a spot near Pralui Point on Kupernov Island and running the power line through a 10-inch conduit there. SEPA CEO Trey Acteson explained the benefits of that new alternative.
It avoids Petersburg Creek, which I know was a recreational area that people were really concerned about. It avoids avoids Kupernov, which seemed to be a highly sensitive area, and basically entails coming across the throat of the inlet there, and then going underground once it gets over to the shore.
That option could also mean burying the power line and existing overhead lines along Sandy Beach Road out to Sandy Beach Park, and that new option has become the preferred alternative for SEPA of the three still under consideration. The two northern route options are about 56 miles long, while the center-south route is about 10 miles shorter. It's also cheaper to construct. The latest cost estimates put the center-south route at nearly $59 million. The other two range from $65 million to $72 million. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicnicki.
And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or you'd like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW, Sitka.